This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, good morning. What's happening?
I'm great, Pack. Good to be with you. We got a really good show today on this first round of the NFL draft, of course, tonight in Cleveland. Trevor Lawrence of Clemson expected to be the presumptive number one pick, but could be one of several ACC guys to go between tonight and by the end of the proceedings tomorrow night when rounds two and three are conducted in Cleveland. So to that effect, Eric McClain's going to join us at 8 o'clock. We'll talk about guys beyond Lawrence who he thinks will have their name called and could be a potential impact for their respective team. And I may even throw a couple in there for you, too. We will also visit with Sheehan Birch, who has done just a phenomenal job covering women's lacrosse. Really enjoyed the work yesterday she and Jay Alter did in the quadruple header of the ACC Women's Lacrosse Championship. We'll get caught up on day one of the championship, and we'll do that at the bottom of the hour here at 7:30. In Notre Dame women's lacrosse coach Christine Halfpenny will be here as well. What a game that was, right? With Duke yesterday. And Syracuse athletic director John Wildhack will be here at 9 o'clock. And at 9:30 today, the envelope, please, we will announce the ACC Women's Golf Awards and have a special guest with that.
Nice.
All that coming up on the Thursday program.
All right, question for you.
I think that's a good show. That's a really good Thursday, by the way.
Of course. That's what we do. All right, so here it is. Over-under.
No.
Over-under. ACC players drafted in the first round tonight. And I will tell you that Notre Dame players are not included. They are an independent. ACC players drafted in the first round. I'm giving you over and under. The number is 5. What do you like?
I like Lawrence, Darrisaw, Farley, ETN, Phillips.
Well, there's 5.
Lawrence,
so
Darrisaw,
you're going
Farley,
over and
ETN,
under.
Phillips. That's 5. I'll throw one more in there and I'll say over. I'll throw one more in there because I still think there's something, and this is in the weeds early, and I apologize, okay? There's something about the running backs here that's getting lost. In other words, there's ETN for sure, Najee Harris for sure. Javonte Williams is every mock draft that I've read in the last 3 days, and I've read a few, have Javonte Williams in the first 5 picks of the second round. Well, typically, and we do this show here in Atlanta tonight. It's 4 hours long. We do a show, a digital show that airs tonight from 7 to 8. Pack, somebody in the second moves to the first, and somebody in the first moves to the second. And to me, that's a running back tonight, and Javonte Williams might be that guy. So I'll say over. I just think you'll throw one more in there, and that would get you to the over.
Okay.
The reason I'm talking about this is because the Falcons are picking at 4 and at 35. And if they do at 4 what I think they'll do and take the tight end from Florida, Kyle Pitts, then one of the options they would have at running back would be – or one of the options at 35 would be a running back, which they need. And it might be Javonte Williams. They could go, by the way, edge rusher, and that could be Boogie Basham, by the way. So Boogie Basham would be another one that I would watch of Wake Forest who could also slip into the back end of the first round.
Listen, Trevor is going to get all the spotlight tonight. I get it, right? It's been going on now for months and months and months, and he's going to Jacksonville, and Urban Meyer will start his regime and off to the races we go. Other than Trevor Lawrence, take Trevor off the plate a second. We're going to put him over there on the number one spot. Of the ACC players that you just rattled off, and even the ones you did not, everybody who's available for the draft, who are you most interested in to follow? And I know we just kind of did this question yesterday, but of the guys in the 21 draft, other than Trevor Lawrence, who from the ACC do you think will be the most interesting follow in the NFL?
Well, typically, you know, and you know this because the NFL's geared just like college football. We talk more about skilled guys than we do linemen, right? So immediately you would say, or like, I think Caleb Farley is going to be a really good player in the National Football League. Okay. He's a guy who, a little bit like we mentioned, you know, Sage Surratt yesterday and some of those guys. I think that a guy who's not as obvious, who I think will be a really good player in the NFL, is Rashad Weaver of Pittsburgh. Caleb Farley is going to be a good player. I think Rashad Weaver, the defensive end at Pitt, is going to be a very good player in the NFL because, number one, he's productive. And I think Basham is going to be a good player. I think those two guys in particular are going to have pretty good NFL careers because their skill set right now fits with what most NFL defenses do. They can play hand on the ground. They can stand up. They can move in space a little bit. They can go side to side. They're incredibly athletic. But they're also incredibly instinctive players. So Weaver and Basham would be two guys that I would be pretty excited about. Jalen Phillips, I think, also potentially falls into that category. But Caleb Farley in the secondary, if healthy, I think Caleb Farley could be a really, really talented player in the league.
See, I'm with you on Weaver and Boogie. I think those guys maybe get overlooked tonight. Perhaps. Who knows? Again, who knows with the draft? I mean, the draft's always a dice roll once you get past the first couple. And I think once San Francisco determines what they're going to do at three, a game is on, right? We'll see how everything falls into place. But I'm with you with Boogie. I think, you know, again, for folks who've watched a lot of Wake Forest football, this guy was a problem. This guy was a problem for everybody that took on the folks from the Switzerland. And you know what? You couldn't block him. And I just think in this day and age, a lot of times guys from a smaller school – we'll go, you know, we'll get them in the second round. We'll get them in the third round. You know, one of those routines. I think number nine right there in black, I'm telling you, he tackled anything that moved. I think he's going to be a really good pro.
Man, and, you know, he's – and you pick out a school or two here where he's doing this now. I mean, you know, like a moment ago we saw Clemson. Okay, right here, that's against the real offensive line.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech's got guys that are going to be pros, Darisaw being one of them.
Yep.
And Basham is breaking that house apart. Clemson, they got guys going to be pros. Jackson Carman's going to wait and hear his name called this week. I mean, he's doing it against high-level guys. That's what's intriguing about – and I'll just share this. The level of competition now, in my opinion, the level of competition in college is also a gear to which the evaluation process is taking place. In other words, and not to say that the bigger the school, the better, but the scenarios of the teams you're playing, and that's why I think the ACC's football ascent pack that we've talked about is really important here. Coaches, resources, facilities, all those things, that means better competition, which means better evaluation principles for the next level. And I think Basham and Weaver and Phillips, those are all guys that I think could potentially benefit from some of that as we move forward here this weekend.
You know, another name, again, if you look at enough mocks, you'll see just about everybody. I'm surprised I didn't see your name in there somewhere on one of these mock drafts. Asante Samuel's another guy.
Late.
Yeah, I didn't say you were top of the line. I just said, you know, if you see enough of them, you see literally every name. Anybody who's ever met in your life, you'll see their name somewhere in a mock draft. But Asante Samuel's another guy that you see that name pop up. And he, again, there will be a surprise somewhere late first round. You just kind of feel that just the nature of the beast, that somebody is going to take a flyer late first round that you go, whoa. And Mel Kiper will lose his mind. And, you know, everybody that does all this stuff nonstop around the clock will scream to the high heavens, where are they coming from with that pick? I mean, that happens literally every single year in the NFL draft. Just saying. So if you're into it, get it all over.
I'll give you one here. Yeah, let me give you one. One of these quarterbacks is going to fall tonight, okay? It's just going to happen. I mean, I don't know which one. I have an opinion, but it doesn't matter. One of the quarterbacks is going to fall, and somebody is going to crack up the first round with a pick. In other words, some team will do something that will skew the rest of the first round, and it may send guys tumbling. It may rise guys. It always happens. We've been doing this first-round radio show now for nearly a decade, and it happens. Every year, somebody, an expected group of players, one will fall. And the second thing that's bound to happen is somebody will take somebody six, seven, eight spots earlier than they're expected to go. And when it does, it cracks up a little bit of the next five or six picks. So there you go. That's what happens here. And some teams benefit from other teams' misgivings and vice versa. And we will see kind of how this unfolds. The one thing, though, that I will say this, having been around the young man since he was a sophomore in high school, I'll say this. Nobody has dealt with the expectations across the board, Pac, and you know this because obviously in following Clemson and the expectation level when he signed with Clemson to the expectation level that when he arrived at Clemson, he was going to be the presumptive starter from that first time he appeared in the spring game after he early enrolled to now, nobody has handled this kind of platform with a lot more calmness, if you will, than Trevor Lawrence. I mean, you give him credit, right? I mean, it's not been some, you know, wild bash on the way. This guy's handled all of this, and tonight becomes the third current ACC player to be taken number one overall.
Well, here's what I like about him. He looks like he hasn't changed a lick. You know what? It's not the big head thing where, hey, I'm the big yep. man on campus. That's not who he is. And he's always been a team guy. You know, he's now got his degree. He's now married. He's now got multiple endorsements. He's kind of handled it like a pro even when he was a teenager. That, hey, you know, part of the gig is, guess yep. what? The light is going to be bright. But he's always been able to kind of deflect that and just say, it's not about me. It's about the team. Let's go win. Mm-hmm. And he has done that as well as anybody can, whether we're talking about high school or college. And you mentioned the expectations. You know what? All those boxes were checked. And that's why I think the criticism from the Sports Illustrated piece a couple weeks ago was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. When you keep talking about, well, you know, the guy doesn't play with a chip on his shoulder. Dude, let me tell you what he does. He plays to win every time he goes on the field. And if you haven't been paying attention, he's pretty good in that department. And I tell you another thing I like. I like the fact he's not going to be in Cleveland tonight. I love that. I love the fact that he said, hey, you know what? Tonight, everything I've worked for in my life comes to tonight where, guess what? I'm going to get picked to play in the National Football League, even as the number one pick. And I'm going to do it and hang out with my family. And I to me, it kind of tells you who he is. I think more than anything else, because it would be easy to take the high road egomaniac trip of, hey, I've won this in high school. I've won this in college. I've done this. I'm the number one pick. I got my new deal with Adidas. I got this on the Gatorade. It would be so easy just to go to Cleveland and go, hey, you know what? I've earned this. Let me just go party like a rock star and play the role of the hot shot number one pick quarterback and all that. It's not who he is. And I admire him for it, to be honest with you. I think it's kind of cool that he's going to be hanging with family and friends. And when his name's called tonight as the number one pick, you know what? He's celebrating with the people that it means the most. That's his family. And to me, that is a snapshot of who this guy is. And, you know, listen, I don't care what team you root for. You almost wish every single student athlete handled their business like Trevor Lawrence did, right? Great player. Terrific teammate, got his degree, fell in love with his girlfriend. Bam, they're married. Life is great. And if he goes on, listen, I have no idea if he'll be a good pro or not. Got no idea. But he is an easy, easy guy to root for. That I absolutely do know.
Yeah, and those that I've known him a lot longer than I've been fortunate to have realized and said to me that tonight makes a lot of sense if you've been around him because – he can't take everybody he wants to have around him to Cleveland. It's just that simple. And tonight is as much about the people around him as it is what he's going through. And I think that's smart. His mom and dad have always stayed pretty grounded, it sounds like, which is also really important. They're incredibly nice people. But at the same time, I'll say this too. Rarely do you see somebody handle the expectation with as much calmness and coolness, Pac, as this guy's handled all that. And that's a good sign for Jacksonville because what they don't need in rebuilding that franchise's situation is somebody to come down there who, you know, is erratic. The last thing this guy is erratic. He'll be a sensational representative of the community. I think he's already kind of proven that. And I think it's going to be – I think if patience is preserved in this process, because it will take it, the payoff could be pretty big for the Jaguars and Shad Khan. So be interesting to see kind of how it all unfolds for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a cool night, though. It'll be great for Trevor, for Clemson, for the ACC to have another number one overall pick in the draft. And, again, I think the interesting number tonight is how many ACC players you're going to see. And I just threw the number five at you.
Yep.
Take it. I think that's going to be in the neighborhood, one way or the other. And when we get back here tomorrow.
Five, okay.
We'll have we'll a lot to talk about. Yeah, I think five's in the neighborhood, right? It could be six or seven. It may be four. I got no idea. We'll find out tonight. But we know who's going to be number one, and that will be a big-time story tomorrow on the show, for sure.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday, 844-SAY-ACCN. In case you haven't heard, NFL draft is tonight. I don't know if you heard. NFL draft's tonight. Same.
Is that tonight?
Yeah.
Is that tonight? Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, I'm making
first
note.
Round.
We'll talk about that later, I guess.
Are you good? By the way, you got a full night ahead of you, sounds like. Sounds like this is going to be a busy West Durham double dipper.
Yeah. You know, our man it's Dave Archer and I and Mike Cotty, we do about a four hour radio show tonight. We'll do a digital show this afternoon with DJ Shockley over on the SEC Network. We do a Falcons pre-draft show. There's a lot going on today. Hey, it's good, though. It's all good.
Let me tell you something. Working two jobs won't kill you. Working two jobs won't kill you, West Durham.
Nah, it's all good.
You'll be all right.
Nah, it's
welcome to the real world.
It's April, man.
So we're welcome to the real world. Two shows.
Thanks.
One day.
Appreciate it.
You can handle that.
All right. You want to dive into some of these steals? This is always fun to do, I think. I mean, you look back and say, wait a second, that guy was drafted where? Right? Let's start with some recent ones. NFL, ooh, I like the way we put this. Best value draft selections in current ACC school history.
Who wrote this? Who wrote that? Was that a Mel Kiper? The Mel Kiper, right there.
That? Macri.
Best value, huh? Mel Kiper writing our material. There?
What happened? Who wrote that?
Voice of Victory.
Yeah. So, all right, here we are. Let's start with Virginia Tech. Roddy Jones will tell you to this day, this was one of the scariest guys he ever played against.
Right.
And I didn't play against him. I just saw him run around and knock people down. Cam Chancellor was the man. My gosh.
Grown man ahead here.
I mean, at Virginia Tech?
Boink.
Stop it.
Somebody help that. Somebody help that man up.
Really?
Boink. Somebody help that man up. That's my ball. Yeah, he was a man. And listen, he was
Frank
a
Beamer,
freak.
By the way, if Frank Beamer's watching this morning, if Frank Beamer's watching this morning, I can remember standing in a meeting room with Paul Johnson. We were just talking the week of Virginia Tech, and I said, you know, when you start thinking about how you want to attack Virginia Tech, what do you have to do? He says, we have to block 17. 17 has to be blocked. So, anyway, Cam Chancellor, here's one for you. They had to wait to the third round to get one of the best NFL quarterbacks. See, this is my theory on all this stuff. When we get hyped up, and we've been, how many times are we going to talk about these quarterbacks back, right? And here are all these quarterbacks we're going to, you know, roll out there in the first round tonight. And yet, there's some real value in the third. Just ask Russell Wilson. I mean, third round pick, 8-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion. Commencement speaker. All that in one.
I remember going to the NC State South Carolina football game in Columbia. It was on our Southern Fried football tour back in the day. Yeah, I think Russell Wilson was a freshman. And he got decapitated that night. He got hit into the Atlantic Ocean. I didn't think he was going to get up. And I remember watching that game. We were there, obviously, on the tour. And, I mean, he got hit so hard. And I'm like, man, that poor guy, that guy, he got no shot, right? I mean, that he's too small. He's just getting the game's too big, too strong. And here we are. And every time I see Russell Wilson going nuts on a Sunday, I go back to that game in Columbia, South Carolina, where the Gamecocks hit him in the. I'm telling you, I've never seen a dude get hit so hard. And I keep thinking, you know, it just goes to show you, you know what? If you work your tail off and you got some skill and you mentally throw yourself into it, you can do amazing things. And here he is as not only a dynamic college player, a great pro player. And you know what? Like you said, there wasn't no first round written on him, but the dude just works. And it just it's a reminder for all of us that, you know what? Just roll up your sleeves and get to work, because that's what this guy's done. He has been tremendous.
No doubt.
Fantastic.
Another third round pick out of Pittsburgh. Third round guy. Yeah, there's some hits and there's some misses, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure there were a handful of running backs that were drafted before Curtis Martin was. Taken originally third round by the New York Jets or by New England, then finished with the Jets. Fourth all-time leading rusher in NFL history. Good heavens.
Baller. Just a baller.
I mean, oh, major league. Major league.
There's poor folks from Temple trying to catch him. Good luck with that. That ain't happening.
Yeah. Yeah, the old vet. Nice job.
No.
All right. Tenth round pick. Back when they had 10 rounds. One of the greatest moments in NFL history of the last 50 years, Pac. How's that?
Strong
this
statement.
Guy was on the back end of it. 10th round pick out of Clemson, won two Super Bowls. Dwight Clark. And that wasn't easy either. I mean, he had to make the team. I remember the story he told one time. He had to make the team, Mark.
Yeah, there's number 30. That's right, number 30. Making a catch. And, you know, when you look at his college stats, they're no big deal. You know, guys come to – in fact, the only reason he was – the way he was found – youngster people. The way he was found, they called him up to say, hey, we're going to look out at some other players. You want to come out there and catch some balls? And next thing you know, San Francisco said, yeah, this guy's pretty athletic. He's got good hands. Yeah. May he rest in peace. I can't believe he's gone, but man, alive! What a what an incredible pro! I mean, again, right scheme, right team, right everything, and then sometimes it falls that way. Sometimes it's the exact opposite. Guy's a great player in college, and just never finds the right team. But Dwight Clark was some kind of player, man, unbelievable.
Yep, 18th round pick, 9-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Famer. At the University of North Carolina, this name gets forgotten a lot, and that's because it's been dang near 50 years. Chris Hamburger. He played for Jim Hickey at North Carolina with Junior Edge and Bob Lacey and teams like that. But Chris Hamburger was a tackling machine and ends up being a star in Washington. There's Ken Willard, by the way, also a pro, played for the 49ers. Okay. The last one here. This is the most of all the ones I want to remember. Now, this guy was drafted 9th round. He won 3 MVPs, went to the Hall of Fame, regarded as one of the generation's best quarterbacks.
But when
he was drafted out of Louisville, he got cut.
Yeah.
By the team that took him in the regional dispersal draft. Baltimore was not his first team. Johnny Unitas.
Johnny U.
Ladies and gentlemen, unbelievable. Used to have the Golden Arm Restaurant, by the way, in Maryland. Oh, is this? We got some Louisville video.
I love this.
Now, somebody's going to have to tell this is a road game. Oh, man, no kidding. Look at this. Oh, look, he's still running the same, even in college. Kind of hunched over, shoulders dropping.
Yeah, that was
a 9th round pick by Pittsburgh, got cut by the Steelers, and went to Baltimore. And, of course, the rest is history with the Colts.
And why I loved Johnny U is because when we were little kids, Wes, and you went to the Sears catalog,
Yeah.
There are only a couple numbers that you could pick from to order. And give, let me tell you something. That's why 19 is my favorite number. Johnny U, 19. Yep. Those black high tops. And no matter what you ordered from the Sears catalog, brother, it was going to be number 19 with the horseshoe helmet, right? At least it was for me. And so 19 was my number, man. It's always been.
That's what you got in the box.
I know it. 19's my favorite. That's why I see Johnny U on there. I said, that's my guy right there, Johnny Unitas. Everybody did if you grew up. You had a 19, man. That's what you wore.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
ACC Women's Lacrosse, the tournament underway yesterday, all day long, all night long on ACC Network. A lot of chalk, though, Wes. One, two, three, and four seeds moving on. A lot of chalk. Ready?
I let me just say this. Jay Alter and Sheehan Birch were working like they were raising money yesterday, right? I mean, they were on all day, all night. And bless Sheehan for joining us here this morning. We appreciate it very much. Knowing that it was a late night by the time BC salted it away last night. And I want to start with BC here. And Mark said we got chalk. And that's a great thing for the sport. But we had a fantastic game with Notre Dame and Duke. But I want to start with Charlotte North, who had, three shots and three goals last night? I mean, maximize your minimums, right? I mean, I thought Virginia did a really good job trying to stay in front of her, but she was sensational again and only got three shots.
She was really good. Virginia employed the face guard, and it really worked the second time around. So Charlotte North has been a gift to women's lacrosse this year. She has so many awesome highlights, really been fun to watch. And when the ball's in her stick, the defenses just panic. But Virginia, you are totally right. They improved on the draw. They got a lot of possessions. And Charlotte North, they limited a lot of her touches. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the semifinal game if Syracuse is going to try to employ that face guard again against Charlotte North, because they were also successful in their last win. Syracuse held Charlotte North to zero goals. So it's very rare when we hear Charlotte North not making waves. But last night, she delivered when the ball was in her stick.
Sheehan, first of all, welcome to the show and all that good stuff since you're making your debut with us in the morning. I know the throat. You got to keep those vocal cords good to go now. We got a lot of work coming up this weekend. Listen, Notre Dame Duke was great, but I'm going to get to that later. What happened with all the offense in our third game yesterday with Syracuse and Virginia Tech? What happened to all the scoring? I'm so used to back and forth. We're in double digits. Man, for a while there, I'm like, what happened? We pulled the plug on that game. It's kind of a crazy, low-scoring game. I just wasn't used to it.
Well, my vocal cords are great to talk with you all. I think it's my four kids I need to limit talking to the next couple hours. Geez. But it was crazy. I mean, that was not the Syracuse team that we've been seeing this entire season. The big news for Syracuse last week was Megan Carney, star attacker, went down with an ACL injury. So Syracuse was able to rebound, and they had an awesome win against Boston College in their second game. So it was hard. I mean, for them to only score 9 goals against Virginia Tech, you got to credit the Virginia Tech defense. They did an amazing job. Ansi Benson and Cage was phenomenal with some stops. But Syracuse is going to need to improve things when they come in. So it's good to kind of struggle when you're in a quarterfinal game. But now they need to make sure that they deliver, because 9 goals is not going to get it done for the Orange.
All right, so you've touched on a couple things here in these two games we've talked about, both BC, Virginia, and the one last night involving Sarah. Are we lending ourselves to a defensive geared event, or does the offense, and I know Carolina put 18 on the board yesterday, I guess, and their win against Louisville, but everybody else kind of grinded this thing. Is that what we expected?
Not really, but I love giving the defense some love, because the offense is, especially in the ACC, we're usually talking about all the goals being scored. So I think it's going to be a complete team effort. I am so impressed with the level of lacrosse in this 2021 season. You know, after a season cut short last year, these players did not rest. They've come back better. They come back stronger, and it's been a ton of fun. So I think we've got great goalies, great defense, great offense. It's everything fans would want, and I think it's going to deliver in the next couple days.
You know what, though, Sheehan? Notre Dame-Duke, for me, delivered what I've now become as a lacrosse expert, since I'm now really into it here for about the last 3 to 4 weeks, trying to pick up the nuances of the sport. High scoring, high drama, first to 17 or 18. I'm kind of used to now watching this. That game had everything you wanted, right? It was high drama, big lead cut short, momentum. Who's going to last touch wins? It kind of felt that way. And you knew 4 against a 5 seed, that in this league in particular, you knew it was going to be competitive. But, man, that was a great, great showdown.
I loved it. I love the 4 versus 5 seed. It really always delivers. Matty Howe for Notre Dame was on fire. But you're so right. I mean, in a sport like lacrosse, you can score goals so quickly. So Duke was down, I think, 5 goals in that second half, and they were able to storm back. It was really impressive. It's exciting, I think, for fans of lacrosse. Notre Dame and Duke both played UNC extremely well, probably the closest anyone else this year. So this will be a great rematch. 1-goal game against UNC in the regular season. So I'm looking forward to when they meet up with North Carolina. But you were so right. The 17-16, high scoring, fast paced, scoring in different ways. It's great saves. Duke went through 3 goalies. I mean, I've never seen that in a 1-goal game for a team to go through three different goalies. But it was a lot of action and fun to watch.
All right, so she and Notre Dame Carolina today is their regular season matchup was unbelievable. I mean, a 1-goal game in the row in the rain at South Bend. The characteristics of that, how much have these teams changed since then? Or are we potentially walking ourselves into another tight one today?
You know, I think when the semifinals happen, it's going to be another tight one. I think the teams are different. And this right now, each team is dealing with unique kind of injuries. Jamie Ortega for UNC was held out of the game. She looked back to great form in the quarterfinal matchup. But right now you're banged and bruised and it's been a long season. Notre Dame has had their fair share of injuries, but they've also, even though they've lost some players and worked them back in, they've had players that were injured in the beginning of the season that are getting back to 100%. So I love the energy level that Notre Dame is bringing right now. Everyone's had up and downs with this COVID season, but it feels like when you talk to the coaches and players, they feel like all the pieces of the puzzle are matching. So I expect a great game, but the level is much higher right now. ACC championship is on the line right now. You can't have extra turnovers. You got to really make sure the fouls are limited, especially those yellow cards, because at this level, these teams will make you pay if you go a player down.
Sheehan, it's probably a good thing everybody's got the day off and they play the semis tomorrow. But as far, we know what North Carolina is about, right? They're the team everybody's got to go beat. But as far as everybody else, now that we've got chalk going to the semis, who has the best depth? Because this is going to come into play whoever makes it to the finals. Hey, you're playing 3 games in a week. This is a grinder with high level, high skill talent. So who's got the best depth? Take North Carolina away. We know how good the Heels are, but Notre Dame knows that they can play with them. As you mentioned, that 11-10 game in the rain was great. Of the other 3 teams, who's got the best depth moving forward?
You know, that's a really tough question because it depends on the day. And I think we mentioned a little earlier with Syracuse, when they've been playing great, their win against Boston College, they looked unstoppable. Last night against Virginia Tech, they struggled. They were a good team, but they weren't the great team that we've seen the last few games from them. I think Boston College can be really strong, and if Charlotte North has one of her amazing performances, even though the offense around her is so strong, I think that's really good. Notre Dame, though, they've got Bridget Dehan and Cage, and when she is solid, the whole defense plays extremely well around her. They've got the offensive weapons. So I think based on the quarterfinal performance, I'm going to give my vote to Notre Dame.
Interesting, which really sets up a great match tomorrow, right? I mean, I'm just reading between the lines here. You're sensing, hey, if North Carolina's got a hiccup or a problem, the problem is coming up on Friday.
It may well be. I mean, it's a very talented team, and I think to have a 1-goal game, and Notre Dame had a letdown where they let Duke come back, but that's all good. When you win, you take those little learning experiences and you build on them. But I think they're looking forward to rematch. I think it's always good to kind of go in being the underdog. Now, that said, UNC, we've talked about them, and I know how much you guys like them. They are amazing, and they have so much talent. Yeah. And each game, it seems like somebody else shines. I mean, the people that are on their bench could be starting for many programs throughout Division I. So it'll be exciting, and Syracuse on an A game day and BC on an A game day, they can challenge UNC. So fans, we've got a treat coming up.
All right. She and Christine Halfpenny will be with us, by the way, at 8:30 this morning. So we're looking forward to catching up with her on the off day. Here's my last
Tell
thing.
Tell her I said
and,
nice things
and Mark,
about them.
As Marcus said, we've watched. yeah, I will. We'll pass that along. Thank you. We've watched a lot of lacrosse this year. We've gleaned a lot. We've learned a lot along the way here doing these spring shows. Now, I'm going to add this. Yesterday in watching you and Jay with the coverage from Chapel Hill, I know you were one of the great attackers in women's lacrosse. Here's the deal. I saw charging like three or four times in women's lacrosse, and that to me looked more brutal than a college basketball charge. I mean, stick in hand, ball in the net, and next thing you know, somebody's getting blasted right in front of the cage pack. I'm just not sure that's a health and welfare type move in a sport like that. It's crazy looking.
That was interesting. Yeah, I don't think I can remember a game where we saw so many charge calls. So sometimes a coach can get to officials' ear, or they're actually seeing it. I mean, we're calling the games from home, so it's a lot harder to get that live field action to see what happened. I would tell you, and just from watching women's lacrosse, I know from people that aren't familiar with it, the defense never gets any calls. So it is great to see the defense get rewarded, and those charge calls are as good as a goal for them. But I did agree that there was quite a few charge calls, but the attackers, they're never slowing down. Jeez. So, I mean, they're so strong and bullying through that it's nice to see the defense get awarded, because typically they're always getting sent 4 meters behind for a foul.
Gene, I hope a conversation with old guys is not the equivalent of those four kids you're going to be dealing with. So hopefully we got you through these 15 minutes unscathed.
This was amazing. I got to head up to homeschool right now. This is the easiest part of my day. So
excellent. Well, you made it easy for us. Keep up the great work.
Bless your heart.
So thanks for having
thanks,
me.
Thanks, Gene.
Great
appreciate
job, guys.
It.
Enjoy the show.
You bet.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Eric McClain coming up here in about 15 minutes, top of the hour. Christine Halfpenny, Notre Dame's women's lacrosse coach, will be here at 8:30. John Wildhack, the AD at Syracuse, 9 o'clock. And speaking of the Orange, yesterday we had Dino Babers stop by the program, had a great conversation with the Orange Heads football coach, and we said, things are starting to come to a close this spring. How's it been?
We've got one more tomorrow starting at 6 a.m., and when that gets finished, we'll be finishing up our finals and getting ready for our summer preparation before we go to those strenuous one-a-days that the young people all talk about here in August.
Hey, listen, we know this has been an upside-down year, right? But, man, the good news, Coach, is we're light years ahead of where we were this time a year ago. And I know that people want to put rearview mirror and you need to put it behind you, which I know you have. So tell us what you've seen so far in this spring practice combination. What? Give me the good news out of Syracuse.
You know, I think the good news out of Syracuse is we had a lot of young people play, and maybe not by design, but we had to put them out there. And the outcomes of some of those games, or a lot of those games, were not what we wanted. But the one thing that all those young people got was experience. I mean, they played in the ACC. They played against guys that were better than them sometimes, taller, faster, stronger, and it's affected their offseason. They realize how far they're behind as far as from a strength standpoint. I'm talking about our younger freshmen. I want to say we've got 57 out of our 85 scholarships are freshmen, and between the two or three classes with the special year where the guys get to return. So this is a very, very, very young team with some very knowledgeable, experienced guys in the super senior class, in the junior class, and in the sophomore class. And I'll tell you what, we came in this spring, and our thing we wanted to do is give these young people their entire tool belt and make sure that they had the fundamentals that they needed to have a better outcome versus the competition that you have to play in the ACC. And I'm very, very proud of where these guys are at. I'm very, very proud of where they battled a very physical spring. And, you know, for the ones that survived it and the ones who didn't, we all got better.
You mentioned the young people. When I saw your team in November, it was basically freshman, redshirt freshman. And I know we were talking, I think we had the conversation in the fall about how roster management would be impacted by the extra year. What kind of scenarios played out for that? And of those younger people who played a lot last year, and I'm thinking about Greenwood and Hannah and Carter and Williams and Stephon Thompson. I mean, which of those guys have you seen, particularly out of the secondary, take a step for you?
You know, I think that all those guys, now some of those guys, as crazy as it sounds, those young people playing in those games, and I'm not going to give you their names, but some of those guys didn't have an opportunity to go through the spring. There was injuries from the fall and playing in guys that were so much older, so much more physical, and now they survived the season, but some of those injuries needed time to recover. And some of those cats had to sit and watch. Not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah.
And I think that that is also going to help us because there's growth in the family. And those guys that had to sit and watch those 14 practices also understand how stressful and how committed everybody was to getting better. And I think they're eager to get their opportunity to get the clearance from the doctor so they can go through their summers and really be ready to join this team in August so we can get back out there and erase some wrongs.
Tommy DeVito seems like he's been there for 15 years. What's the quarterback room like and the competition this spring at quarterback?
The competition's great. You know, I think all those quarterbacks have been competing their tails off. They look much better. But, again, it's going to come down to we need those guys to be the leaders in the room. Our quarterbacks are our racing car drivers for our cars, and we want to get the good Tommy DeVito back, and we're going to see where Garrett can do, and we've got Jacoby in, and we got Dylan, we got a very talented freshman in Justin, and we think that it's the most competitive room we've had in a long, long time, and they're not done yet. 14 practices is not the end, and we've got to continue that growth over the summer and then continue it during August and see where this stuff all ends up in September.
You know, we talked during the course of the season last year in preparation for games. I know there were highs and lows. You had to almost go what blindfolded into each day. You weren't sure what was going to happen. Pack and I used to say something at breakfast might change by lunch, and then by dinner you weren't sure again. What did you take away from a year ago that helps you in what you want to do with this football program? As hard as it was, what do you take away to process to say, hey, we're going to do something, we're not going to do this, we are going to do this type deal?
You know, it really makes me think back to my father. It's, you know, we were a military family. My father was gone a lot. And, you know, we had our daddy rules and we had our mama rules. And when daddy was around, we'd do what in the hell he told us to do. But really, mama was running the show, you know. But it comes down that there was a lot of distractions. And some teams dealt with it better than others. And I don't think we dealt with it that well. And we got too distracted. And when it comes to dad, those dads sometimes do the family can have all these different thoughts on what we should do, and then dad's going to come in and say, well, you know what, that's all nice, and I really appreciate all those opinions, but we're doing this. So pack your bags, make up your bed, and we're about to roll out of here. And I think I did a better job of that. There was a lot of distractions. After the season was over, I tried to eliminate as many distractions as I could. And I wanted them to totally focus on the little things of getting better, fundamentally getting better, getting bigger, stronger, and working on their academics, because all those things are going to come into play so that we can be relaxed and really get into a groove in the fall on turning this thing around.
You know, Babers, yesterday you will hear from his boss coming up in the Power Hour when John Wildhack joins us, and always love having John on because we will get into a bunch of stuff with John. He has a total handle on the television world, perfect leader for Syracuse from that perspective. And for Dino Babers, this is an important year, right? I mean, let's be honest. Last year was disappointing. Getting everybody back in the dome is going to help. There's no question about that. He talked about the home field advantage when everybody's rocking and rolling in that dome. But Syracuse needs to have a good year in 21. There's no question.
I thought it was very revealing, and I appreciate his candor with us about they got sidetracked by the distractions last year.
Sure did.
And you know that takes a lot to say, hey, look, we made some mistakes. We made some real mistakes, and I appreciate his honesty with us in talking about last year because I know it was disappointing for Syracuse on so many fronts. But if you realize what the mistakes were and you can prevent them, as it sounds like they have, that may be a step in the right direction in 2021. I do believe that they are going to be an interesting team to watch because of some of the unknowns, and they played a ton of young guys last year. Some were very productive, but that's going to be one of those things we're going to want to watch as August unfolds for sure. Coach always does a good job, you know, keeping the intelligence flow pretty low coming out of Central New York. So we'll have to sort it out as we go along. But they opened the season at Ohio in a Mid-American game. And actually, in some ways, that might be a good thing. Kind of roll it out there against the team, Frank Solich and the Bobcats, who are pretty competitive, but a game you should win. And kind of see what they look like, right? Get a look at Syracuse. And because I don't know how much we'll find out through the course of August camp. And that's the way Dino likes it, I think.
You better not look ahead to old Frank Solich, though. If you're looking past Frank Solich, you may find yourselves in a fist fight. Just saying. That guy's a pretty good football coach. But
no, Syracuse, that's right. They're in a
Syracuse needs to play well. Let's be honest. I said, you know, I thought both Syracuse and NC State last year heading into their seasons, whatever that was going to look like, it was important to have bounce-back seasons. NC State did. Syracuse did not. So I think it kind of puts a little added pressure on the Orange in 21 to get off to a good start and kind of start enjoying playing football again.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.